Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Marie McCollum with a young farmer's story.
Dairy farms in Wisconsin. Today, fewer than 10,000 remain. The Detman family are descendants of German immigrants and have a dairy farm in Johnson Creek. For more than 100 years, the family farm has expanded, modernized, and have partially relied on laborers from Mexico and Central America. Drew Detman is the oldest of the sixth generation of Detman family farmers, and he intends to stick with it. The Lands We Share Farming History Project recently caught up with the 14-year-old at the Jefferson County Fair and his family farm.
So mostly what the judges are looking for in the heifer classes are their feet and legs, their frame, all that stuff that makes them look dairy, I guess you could say. The cows here at my farm at least have a lot of neck fat. So what you can do in the ring is you can have one hand on the halter and the other hand you can have pulling up some of that fat so she doesn't look too chunky. It's serious, but it's mostly just people bringing their cows to show them at the fair and have fun with their friends. I'm Drew Detman. I am 14 and currently we are up at our farm. I feel like this is a pretty good size right now because it depends on how you all look at it. When you're not comparing it to the other bigger farms, you think it's, oh wow, this is a big farm, 500 cows all in one spot, and that's pretty big. But then you think about all the 10,000 cow farms and you realize that we're kind of small. So in the dairy prospect of farming, you can definitely see the bigger farms are thriving more right now just because of the lower milk prices, and the little farms are starting to get snuffed out one after another, sadly. Well, I first started driving the Gator, which is a side-by-side off-road vehicle. I first started driving that when I was about 11, which is a lot later than other farm kids, but hey, I mean, we got a lot of farmhands on the farm that do a lot of the work, so I didn't grow up in a family where I really needed to go out when I was 6 and start milking cows, so my dad would be down there because he was the herd manager, which means he had all the shot records and all the medicines that he needs to give everyone. And now that Juan works here, he's actually the herd manager. Now he's starting to take over some of that responsibility from my dad since my dad started running the farm. A few workers know broken English, but usually it's just Spanish that they're talking to each other with. So it was fun to hang out with them. They'd always try and teach me as much Spanish as they could, but you know, I just went through the first class this past year in eighth grade, so. Starting to learn. I can count to 100 now, so. My grandpa took over the farm, then he got drafted for the war, and then when he got back, he took it back over, and then my dad is starting to take over now, so they're half and half right now. My grandpa owns half, and my dad owns half, so someday it'll all be mine. It feels special to have that much history behind you going into the business. Because I feel like if my dad would have just started it, there wouldn't be so much pressure for me to take over it. But I feel like it's a great thing to take on, you know, carrying on the family tradition, you know. Because my dad and mom mostly, they keep telling me that, you know, oh, you don't have to go into farming. You can go into something else. You can go be a chef at McDonald's if you want to. But yeah, I've thought about other things, but I don't know. There's just something about it that. There's just something about it that having a family farm in Wisconsin, you know, family dairy farm in Wisconsin, just seems glamorous, so.
This story is part of the Lands We Share project and was edited by Craig Ely. The exhibit is in Johnson Creek through January, with a community conversation and dinner happening later this month. To reserve a spot for the dinner and learn more, visit landsweshare.org. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Now, packing a cooler full of beer and other beverages is generally thought of as a summertime kind of activity, but participants in a one-of-a-kind running event in Eau Claire might need to bust out their coolers to keep their beverages from freezing. Maybe some heating pads, too.
We're talking about the Snowshoe Beer Mile. It is exactly what it sounds like, with participants drinking beer and running in snowshoes with only one rule. If your snowshoe falls off, you must put it back on before continuing.
Tim McManus is president of the Eau Claire chapter of the Hash House Harrier Social Running Group. Tim, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I know the Hash House Harriers, it's the social running. There's beer involved, not too competitive. How did you make the leap onto snowshoes?
Well, we started hosting the Beer Mile was becoming really popular around the time we started our chapter of the group. And so it was we did them in the summer. And after about our second Beer Mile, it's a little bit hazy as to who's, who came up with the idea. But the conversation went along the lines of, oh, we don't want to wait a whole nother year to do this. This is a lot of fun. We could do it in the winter. Yeah, we could wear snowshoes with it. And it kind of just went from there. We took it and ran, and now we're getting ready for Beer Mile number 4.
Now, running in snowshoes plus beer. I'm not that coordinated to begin with. This sounds easier said than done, right?
Yeah, it's definitely it's awkward. It's clumsy when you get in them right away. I had walked and hiked in snowshoes before I'd done the first snowshoe Beer Mile, but once you put them on and actually start running, there is a big difference. And we found, too, the weather element has been huge in affecting how your performance is. We had our first year, we were running on ice the whole time below zero. The second year, everything had melted. There were puddles and ponds everywhere. And last year, we had probably perfect conditions for it. So the weather, too, is just changes the course of the event from year to year.
Now, spell out that we mentioned one of the rules. Spell out the basic rules for someone to successfully complete their beer mile.
So we were almost exactly to the T like a traditional beer mile. You have to drink 4 beers, and you have to run 4 quarter-mile laps. And it goes drink, run. You do that 4 times. And even all the other, there's some other stipulations and more nitpicky rules. We do those the same, too. The only difference is you have snowshoes on, and you're running it through our course that we have usually, hopefully this year we'll see, with a lot of snow to factor in with that.
And how do the times compare the run versus the snowshoe?
They're, some of the top people, they're getting a little closer between the summer one and the winter one. I would say usually about 5 to 10 minutes you can expect to be slower during a winter beer mile than the summer one. But, this is number 4 we have coming up now. So we've gotten, several of us have gotten the hang of it. There's a lot of competitions and rivalries going. So it's on, and those times are getting better each year.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the competitiveness level because it's partly for the social aspect and for the fun, but people are running, are snowshoeing to win here.
Yeah, we have, over the last few years, we've taken a lot of feedback from this event and experimented with different things. And kind of one of the big things we heard from a lot of people is, oh, this sounds like a really fun event. I'd like to do it, but I don't know if I'd like to drink 4 beers. And we're like, well, that's understandable. That's actually probably a normal response that someone would have to a question like that. But we didn't want that to be the sole reason for just deterring them from coming to the event altogether. So over the last few years, we've actually added several other events that we have. So we have the traditional snowshoe beer mile, and that's, we have everyone from competing, myself and several other people that are just diehard for it. It is race on. We're going tooth and nail the whole time. We have people who like to just come up and, complete it and do it and enjoy it. But we also have a half beer mile race that we do. So you cover the same distance, you're running a mile, you're only drinking a half beer each lap. We have an open mile now that you can do any beverage, any amount. People have done mixed drinks, shots, chocolate milk, soda, and probably our biggest one that we've had. Yeah, I did. The chocolate milk was a bad idea. I would not recommend that one. But our biggest event that we've had, in addition that we've added, is a 4-person relay race for our finale. So we get into teams of 4. Each person has 1 lap and 1 drink that they have to do. And that's just a really fun finale to the whole afternoon.
We'll leave it there. Tim, I'll let you get back to training. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I want to give a shout-out to my mom, Melanie. Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
All right. That's Tim McManus with the Eau Claire chapter of the Hash House Harrier Social Running Group talking about the annual snowshoe beer mile race. Happens this year, weather permitting, on January 19th.